Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson Extra. I am Jason Darkish Inman.
I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson, but you already knew that because you are beautiful, sexy people who support us here on Patreon, and you wanted to hear us talk more with the incredible David Bohr about the Dark Crystal.
David Bohr, who likes Dark Crystal. He also is a comic book writer. He likes comic books. He likes Stranger Things. He likes excellent shirts.
He likes The Simpsons.
He likes The Law. But also he writes this amazing comic book, Canto. We talked about it in the main issue. It's the first three issues are out. It's through IDW. It's in comic book shops right now. Myself and Ashley.
You, Jason, and I.
Yes, yes. Me, Jason, Jason, and Jason, and Ashley all endorse Canto.
They're all standing right here. I can attest to it.
Yeah. Intern Brego also endorses Canto.
I'm also like looking at this Canto sticker that's on David's laptop, which I actually kind of want. I think it's really cool.
I have stickers.
I do want a sticker.
The Canto Empire begins.
But Canto is a great read.
Hashtag goals.
So if you're not already reading Canto, go to your comic book shop. Go pick up the first three issues and pre-order the rest of them. It's a really, really great book. But since David's a great writer and a great comic book writer, we thought we'd pick his brain about comic books. I'm going to put you under the gun right now, my friend. Before we started this recording, you said that you had a theory about why certain comic books fail. And I want to hear this theory.
Yeah, and I said it wrong. I should say it more like why certain comic books succeed.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not we don't use fail to sound trolly or anything. Comics get canceled all the time. Mm-hmm. That's literally what happens to comic books.
It's it's a super simple theory. It's just that so many of them, even though they're different, they feel the same. And I read a lot of first issues and I just constantly feel like it's the same. It feels the same. Like when my reaction to it is the same and I sort of shrug and I put it aside and I don't follow it. It's just those few that make you feel differently, that they look different, that I think that's why they succeed. So perfect example is Little Bird that's from Image right now. And mm-hmm. I think it just finished its 5-issue run. And it's very unusual story that's never really been told, but it's visually striking and it just feels so different from what's out there. And I think that's why it succeeded. Middle West is another very successful one. And that succeeded because it's a different type of story and the creators have just done what they wanted to do with it.
As soon as you posited your theory, I thought of Saga immediately.
Saga?
Very, very striking visual. It has the easy in right of the Romeo and Juliet, but it has its own mythology and world that really spins out of that original arc.
I thought you made an excellent point because that is a thing, and I think the big two are probably more guilty of that than others, but there are so many first issues and independent comic book first issues where you read it and you're just like, that's the first issue? That's it? Like, this is your first shot out of the gate, and this is all you gave me. But I'll say that I also think that about television shows too, where I'm like,
This is your
pilot. Like this is like you got to grab me. Like you got to grab me.
I mean, there's so much content out there, right?
Yes.
It's very easy to sort of go to the comic book shop every Wednesday and just pick up all the first issues that mm-hmm. are on the shelf and just check them out and see what you connect with and what you don't.
If you're that person, though, and that's all you ever buy, I guarantee you that staff hates you.
Well, right. But hopefully the idea being that you find bird or your
you're not Midwest the collector.
Or those
scalper,
aren't collectors. Those people are called speculeeches. Mm-hmm. They're trying to figure out what is popular and what they can buy a bunch of copies of.
Yeah.
So I guess that ties into why I am so excited about Canto, our book. When Drew sent me the first concept art like 2 years ago of Canto as a character, I knew within half a second, as soon as I saw this, I said, we're telling this little guy's story.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it's going to be yet, but we're telling this story. And it was just because it's just something I'd never, ever seen before,
mm-hmm.
except for maybe in like The Dark Crystal, some of the films back then. But it was that reaction that got me excited about wanting to do this story over all the other stories that are possible out there.
I'm sure it's not the only thing that you were developing at the time either. So it's interesting that that's what grabbed you enough to be like, we're going to move forward with this in an active way, because comics
are hard.
Take a lot of work.
Independent comics
demand a lot from the creative team before someone like IDW or any other publisher even gets their hands on it.
Yeah. So the background of our comic, it was in development for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
We put together a pitch with a few pages. That was what we were going to send out to editors.
Are those pages in the books? Or will
yeah,
they never
the first
see the light
six
of day?
Pages.
Okay, cool.
So for, I mean, they've been, since been redrawn.
Yes, yeah.
But they were the first six pages. And then we, I think it was Drew who came up with this brilliant idea. If it's a big fantasy epic, we wanted to tease what was coming. And so he drew this extra page that doesn't appear anywhere,
mm-hmm.
except for in this pitch. And it's just three horizontal panels. In each one, I think the dialogue is... my name is Kanto, and then you turn the page, and it says, and this is my story. And it's got three panels, and it's just three different settings and creatures in Kanto encountering them. And so it's just this promise of where the story is going to go, and that's the last page of the pitch.
I love little stuff like that, because we did that with the end of our first issue of Jupiter Jet, where, and if you go and look at our trade of Jupiter Jet, each of those, it's four panels for the next four issues, each of those panels actually appear... Or, you know, like
in some version
in the next issue.
Different
and
version,
and
yeah.
a lot of people didn't figure it out, but it was like panel one is issue two, panel two. It was 2, 3, 4, 5.
It was
five.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, the luxury we had, it's like the end of a season of TV, right? Instead of, you don't know necessarily if you're going to be greenlit, and you certainly mm-hmm. haven't shot it yet, but imagine if you had a sizzle reel for the second season that you could air at the end of the last episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just like, here's what's coming.
But also, like, it lets you, because you, if you know, like, oh, there's this cool moment here, there's this cool moment here, there's this cool moment here, you don't know how you're going to get there. But also when you actually sit down to write like issue three, issue four, issue five, you're like, well, I know I have this cool idea. So how do I get
we
there?
We would never. Yeah, I mean, it was just set out from start. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a little flying by the seat of our pants a little bit. But...
Did you have a list of things that you were like, oh, this was a great idea, but we'll get to this later down the road? Because that's like a thing that we're a big fan of when we co-write is... You're talking, idea, and then we're like, blah, 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 this is great, but not for what we're doing right now.
Put a pin in it. Yeah, so there's been things that have come up that we sort of have put aside for future stories.
Mm-hmm.
But so Kanto is sort of based around Wizard of Oz and Dante's Inferno. So you have like the light and the dark. And so a lot of the benchmarks, if anybody is... I mean, I read Inferno, and it's very, very, it's not.
I've read it before, too.
It's not designed for a post-16th century audience.
Yeah, yeah.
But I read through it, and there's these benchmarks. There was these, you know, you go through, I would read passages in Inferno, and then I'd get to this one image, and I would just be like, oh, did I just read that right? There's this one image of these female... sinners.
Oh,
I don't
yeah. Women
remember.
Get done real dirty by
but
Dante.
They're floating in the air and they're like ripping their skin off of their chests.
Yeah.
Like they're ripping their bodies open. And I was just like, did I just read that right? So obviously, with an all ages book, we're not going to be doing anything like that. But it was just those kind of little images. And then Wizard of Oz, I like to say that the sort of the story as it unfolds was inspired by Wizard of Oz, and a lot of the imagery was inspired by Dante's Inferno.
Oh, cool.
So those are our benchmarks going forward. But on the pitch part of it, that last page was also a proof of concept.
Mm-hmm.
So it would show editors, we actually kind of know what we're doing. And I think that's all they really want, is to just have confidence in whoever they're bringing on.
Especially if you are not coming to them with a completed product, because sometimes people do go ahead and they just make a comic or a graphic novel or the full series and then they're pitching it. And that is always an easy sell. Like having worked as an editor, publishers will greenlight your finished book way quicker than they will greenlight. And I'm not advocating for people, yeah, for yeah. people to do that, because I think that's way harder and then there's less room for course correction along the way.
I would say that the circumstance when you should do it, all you creators out there, is when you believe in the story so much that you are willing to put your blood, sweat, tears, and money
mm-hmm.
into it.
Your $15 million like Jim Henson.
$15 million like Jim Henson. But if you're willing to see it through. So with Kanto, we kept moving forward with the art
yeah.
because we knew if it wasn't going to land at a publisher, we were still going to do it because we mm-hmm. wanted to tell this story.
Mm-hmm.
And you should feel passionate that way about every comic that you want to make. But
you can't afford every comic you make.
Well,
that's the problem.
That's
yeah.
And to be totally realistic about it, you're going to be spending so much time and energy making this product without a partner
mm-hmm.
and just be. If you're convinced that that's what you want to do, then do it. If not, pitch doesn't land, just move on to the next thing, because that may be the project that you want to spend all of your time on.
Yeah, and you can revisit old projects too. Like, sometimes they're not bad, they're just not right for that time.
Totally.
I know this is the case for you because it's the case for everyone, but Jason and I had pitched several comics before Jupiter Jet ever happened to no acclaim.
Well, and we've said several times that, so Science is finally going to be shipping out to our Kickstarter backers here very soon.
Science, exclamation
yep.
point.
Mm-hmm.
The PDF is already in your inboxes. Check your updates. That's why we send them.
And if any of our patrons, but you know, it's going to come out in December. We pitched Science before we pitched Jupiter Jet.
Really?
And Science came out second.
Yeah.
We pitched Science probably 6 months before we pitched Super Jet.
It looks amazing.
Yeah.
Thanks. Oh, thanks, David.
Thanks, brother.
I'm very, very excited about it. I love Jupiter Jet. I feel so bad on the main podcast. I was like, just shower me with praise.
No,
and I didn't even say anything about how amazing you two are.
That's the point. Yeah. Also, so, everyone, especially everyone who's listening to this one, they all have Jupiter Jet.
Oh, yeah.
Good.
So, David, I want to know, like, just the what are you reading in comics right now that you've been enjoying
besides Little Bird?
Yeah, like what have you been enjoying from anything?
So, I'm reading another IDW series, Road of Bones, which has been successful for them. It's a Russian story set in the 50s about some escapees from a prison who are stuck in the snow. Without food or water or anything, and it's a very brutal horror book, but so beautifully drawn and well written. I really like that. I've circled back to read Sandman because I've never read that before, and I actually had, I picked up for really cheap, all like 10 trades at a thrift shop from the night, like the original Vertigo trades.
Oh, with the original coloring.
Yeah, everything.
Wow.
Everything. And reading that is so exciting because. Just every single page is like, just put it in my eyeballs.
I'm gonna throw it. So, I reread all of Sandman a couple years ago, and I did it where I was like, okay, I'm gonna read one issue a night until I finish it. And Sandman is such a weird book.
It's so weird.
It's great, but it's a weird book. And I have this weird theory that I almost think Sandman wouldn't work now because it's an anthology comic. Like every issue is different, and I think we're in such a serialized nature that I think now people would be like, well, wait a minute, why isn't this issue about the guy from the last? What happened with that?
I don't understand.
Yeah.
There are recurring characters, and some of those characters do go on to appear in mainstay DC or Vertigo books.
Yes,
as well.
And there are ongoing characters in the narrative, but it's very much this issue.
Well,
this issue, this issue.
The back of these trades, there were the original, you know, Neil Gaiman commentary. And I think at one point he said he was basing different issues off of different like themes or like the horror and, you know, one's, you know, science fiction, detective story, that sort of thing. And I forget which one it was, but he did make the comment that, yeah, this one didn't work as well as we had hoped.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really funny. And yeah, so sometimes, especially I think reading comics is like learning a new language. And so sometimes I have family members or friends who are not comics readers who pick up comics that I've written, and there's a disconnect there because it's not it's not just words and it's not just pictures. I don't know what I'm doing. So there's a language that you learn to read, and I feel like those books are, I'm still learning to read the language that's those books use.
I feel like Jason is experiencing that now because everyone's going, oh, you wrote a real book. And you're going, I've written several real books. Soldiers is pro.
Real book?
Yeah.
I've been told
it's
that
like,
by people.
It's like Gaston being like, how do you read this?
Yeah,
there's no pictures.
I've had several friends like that, you know.
They mean well.
They mean well with it. And I appreciate it. But yes, I have gotten the like, oh my God, you wrote a real book. And I'm like, yeah, that's just like book five now, guys.
it's just so funny. Like, we just keep working against that, right? It's just comics continue to, and part of it is structural because, you know, the single issues come out in comic shops and, you know, unless you're a comics fan, you don't go into comic shops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's interesting that you brought up Sandman because those books, I think, do transcend, and there are graphic novels that transcend that barrier, like Fun Home or Are You My Mother? Like, my mom has read those graphic novels, or blankets, or like there are books that
I totally agree with that.
And they're the ones that seem to be less, more memoir and less genre based, because.
And I love those. Those are that's one of my favorite.
I would also say a very recent one. They Called Us Enemy, written by friend of the show Stephen Scott.
Yeah.
Co-written with, and also George DeGay.
Yes, Mr.
And Justin Isinger.
Yeah. I forgot that. I couldn't remember the other one.
Yeah, we can call them all New York Times bestsellers. Authors.
Yeah, I know. That book weirdly like jumped into the New York Times bestsellers, even though New York Times bestsellers don't cover comic books anymore, which is, I thought was very interesting. Well,
they,
in the nonfiction.
They don't have a comic book section because Raina Telgemeier reigned it for 15 years.
they called it a graphic memoir.
Yeah.
So New York Times was probably like,
well, New York Times,
that's classy enough for us.
Let's be honest, and I'm going to get real petty about it. There's someone with a very significant name and a very significant pop culture footprint working on that book.
He went on the Today Show to talk about it.
Yeah, so like, you know, that...
When was the last time any comic book author went on the Today Show? But I'm...
We're very happy for them, and the book is truly great.
It actually is a really good book. Yeah, and I'm so very happy. But yeah, like that...
Well, that's how you break through.
It's not,
right?
That kind of credit is not to be ignored.
You have a great story from somebody who we know from Star Trek, mm-hmm. not necessarily the side of his experience.
Yeah.
And to have a book like that come out and then just be as well received as it was, it really helps all of comics.
Absolutely. Yeah.
If you want to write Fun Home for, you know, like she, nobody really knew that story about mm-hmm. her. And, you know, it's just that's the opportunity that we have now.
Let me ask you this. You work in comics like us as well. And as a person that has a comic book on the stand right now, what do you see? I like to ask this question. What's the future of comics? Do you foresee single issues going away? Do you see the industry becoming like the manga model, where it's like every 6 months you get, you know, another 100 pages? Where do you see comics going? Because again, we always hear this thing that like comics are dead, kid, or print is dead, and yet it still sticks around. So,
but I don't know. That's a great question, because you have this whole portion of the consuming public that is now binging episodic content, right? So there was a fun story I heard of a parent whose kid said something like, was astonished to hear that they used to watch TV shows weekly, mm-hmm. not just, you don't binge them? And comics is episodic television, basically. And to wait a month between issues is really challenging for a binging audience. With that said, I don't, the number of copies that a single issue sells that's not Marvel and DC is so, I mean, if you sell over 10,000 copies of an issue number one as a creator, not a big name creator, just like an average creator, that's a extremely successful first issue.
Yeah, and if your issue 5 and 6 manage to break 1,000, you're still doing great, because there is such diminishing returns.
Totally. So the idea that you can get 10,000 orders on a single mm-hmm. issue, there's really not, I mean, if that's the market, then I don't see the market. There's enough people on the planet that I don't see that market going away at all. Mm-hmm. I see more creators probably migrating to the graphic novel as an original form, mm-hmm. as opposed to single issues that are then collected. Mm-hmm. With that said, from a creator perspective, the single issues are just a great opportunity for marketing. Establish the book, establish the story, the characters. So when that trade comes out and it hits the wide market, like Barnes & Noble and Amazon, you already have, you've generated 6 months or 5 months or 4 months of buzz mm-hmm. about this book. So it's like your promotional period. Mm-hmm. I hate to put it like that, because single issues are important.
No, but it's a business, and marketing is incredibly important. And if you're a creative person like me with a totally useless degree, no one taught you that. And I think that is something that we have a lot of people who listen to this who want to create any number of things. And I think that's the most valuable lesson, is like, you have to treat it like a business. Like, you are in this, you know, for fun, but like for fun and profit.
Well, yeah, an investment. Mm-hmm. You treat it like a business, like an investment. So if you don't come out swinging in your first issue, single issue, that's okay if you can keep those legs going for the trade, because mm-hmm. you know, the economics of comics are a $4 single issue. The creator gets I think the creator...
Almost nothing.
This is the statistic that I saw. The creator splits 10% of that cover price with the publisher. So whatever your split is. Mm-hmm. So you're splitting 40 cents an issue with your publisher.
Yeah.
So if it's like 50-50, you get 20 cents an issue. You are not making... You're not retiring on single issue sales.
There is a great set of blogs on Jim Zub, Marvel writer.
That's the statistic I saw.
He has a bunch of great blogs on his website about comic, and he will update his sales and his profit margins every like 6 months to a year. And when you go see his profit margins on his like independent books, it's like scary. You're just like,
it's weak.
You cry. Yeah, you cry.
That single tear.
Well,
I think it's important for people to know that because it's not, obviously for the three of us, it was not a reason to not pursue this, but no one's getting rich off of comics who's not already somebody like Brian Michael Bendis or Tom King and can demand a lot going into the development of a book. The reason to do independent comics is because you have to, because you're drawn to, but also because... you know, we're all hoping that our IPs are real valuable.
Well, that you can control all your rights and how it gets shopped around and that sort of thing, which is important.
We can also argue back with editors. Like, we don't have, you know, you can read notes. You don't have to take notes the way if you are working for Marvel or DC, like, they're footing the entire bills.
Right.
So, you got to do what they tell you
to do. And there's a lot of Marvel and DC titles where, and you can find these interviews out there, where basically the editor told the writer how to write the book.
Yeah.
Like, he was like, here's your outline. And, write the dialogue.
And look, Marvel and DC can hire me at any time to do what the editors tell me. I'd love that problem.
But
that's a reality that when you're working independently, we don't have to deal with. For good and for ill, of course.
Yeah, and then the flip side of that all is if you're having those single issues and you only make 20 cents per copy that gets sold, then the trade comes out. And that's $15 or $20, and it's only, and it's basically reprinting with some additional materials what's already been front-loaded.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's when, if you can get some good sales from your trade, that's when you make some money on your book. And that's where your sort of positive outlook should be as a comics creator.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, and on that note... Speaking of a positive outlook, David, tell our fans, listeners, one last time where they can find, how they can find Canto, with it, why they should be looking forward to Canto.
And how they can find you, too.
And if you are listening to this fresh off the press, issues 1 and 2 are being reprinted and will come out on Wednesday, so August 21st, and issue 3 for the first time will hit shelves on August 21st. So run out and pick it up. We've had... it's been, I mean, it sounds so shitty to say this, but it's been popular, so people have had a hard time finding it on the shelves. So I would say if you want to get into it, go out on Wednesday and find it at your local comic shop. You can get it on Comixology, and they never have shortages of copies on Comixology.
That's why I like Comixology.
And you can find me, you can follow me on Twitter at David Boer. And Instagram at David M. Boer. And you can also follow Canto and his adventures on Instagram at Canto Comic.
By the way, I just want to say, and I love comic book shops, stuff like that, but one of the things, one of the reasons why, and this is why Comixology should sponsor us, one of the reasons I like subscribing to series on Comixology is because I'll get to read Canto number 3 at Tuesday night at midnight, because they all pop up there.
Will you please
as soon as they do
post on the socials if you're down 1201.
I always do every Tuesday.
Do you really?
Tuesday night's my comic book night because unless DC I think is the only one that holds back, but every other company, as soon as it hits midnight, like in your time zone, boom, it's there. So you get to read it the night before. Yeah.
Interesting.
So I go into Wednesday morning, already have read my Wednesday comics. Oh my
gosh, that's amazing.
There you go. There's a life hack for everyone. Yep.
Thank you, Comixology.
Yeah.
Would you like to sponsor the show?
Yeah, please sponsor the show. Thank you so much, everybody out there, for your support. Thank you so much for being awesome patrons. It's because of people like you that we get to talk for almost 25 minutes with awesome people like David. So thank you so much for your support. We really, really appreciate it. I have been Jason Crystallized Inman.
I have been Ashley Victoria Robinson.
Bye-bye, super friends.